morning and welcome to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. I'm Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and we're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, I like to thank the station for helping to work, make this show happen, and running the boards over there and doing that. We have with us in the studio Mr. John McKay. John,
hey-o.
How are you doing over there?
Doing good.
Good. It smelled like fall out there. Absolutely. You bringing those sweatshirts to the games yet?
Well, my Kamaikan sweatshirt has been hijacked by our 8-year-old. It looks like a tent on her, but she says, well, it's yours, but since I'm wearing it, I guess it's mine now.
I like it.
That will absolutely happen. Yeah, it's crazy.
We turned on the heater for the first time the other day, and we got the burnt smell.
I was going to tell you that burnt smell can come up, and that was one of the real estate tips going into this year. It's a lot of times people have been running that AC solid, and it is not a bad idea to make sure you've had your semi-annual HVAC check, had somebody out, clean that thing off, because, yeah, if you get a lot of dust and debris in there, sometimes you do get that burnt smell for the first couple times.
Spray off the outside and change the filter.
Absolutely. In here with us in the studio also, our in-house lending specialist, Mr. Tom Coyne at Umpqua. Tom, how are you doing?
You know, fantastic. I think I got about the same things going as John does. You know, I'm cutting the sprinklers back, preparing for them to get shut off, and it's getting colder, and the year's flown by.
And you guys are just on it with these tips. The other real estate tip that I had for this time of year for people is exactly what you said, and that's the sprinklers.
October 17th is the KID shutoff.
October 17th, yep, KID shutoff. Now, if you are thinking about selling sometime in the next 5 months, very little different process this year is a buyer, if they buy in the next 5 months, is going to want verification that your sprinklers have been blown out. So a lot of times you have that issue where it might just be the guy running down the road, no receipt book, you know, $30.
So written on a napkin.
Will blow out your sprinklers. You want to make sure that you get an actual receipt this year when you do that, if you are thinking about transferring that property, because buyers will want that reassurance that the sprinklers have been blown out. So, Tom, thanks. You're right on target.
I'm on it.
Leading me into these tips. Well, we always like to lead off with kind of our crazy residential story. And this one, I thought, in honor of last week's vice president debates and what's going on with election time, it seems like, as if she wasn't busy enough, it seems like Hillary Clinton and Bill recently closed on a house in upstate New York by Chappaqua that $1.16 million they paid for the house next door. So they're kind of creating that compound. They said, you know, maybe potentially when Chelsea comes to visit them, she could just have this whole house to stay. So they're kind of creating, it said in the article, a Kennedy-esque compound up there. So 3,600 square foot, 3-bed, 4-bath house on 1.5 acres next to the house that they bought near the end of Bill's presidency. So interesting. I mean, it's bad enough. Like, it's a lot of stress to go through a house purchase anyway. I'm trying to imagine running for president and purchasing a house.
Maybe,
Tom,
they just didn't want neighbors. You know, I don't know.
Potentially, yeah. And I'm thinking there had to be definitely some advisors or some people helping with that situation, because I think she's got quite a bit on her plate right now.
Yes, so. I will take the high road. There's a myriad of one-liners that come to mind, but I will withhold them.
Yes, McKay, I appreciate you keeping it non-political for the real estate show.
Absolutely.
But I thought I would throw that in there. People listening can make their own judgments, and I'm sure there are some absolute jokes that we could come off with that for sure. On another kind of national related story, housing always kind of follows economic health sometimes. So I always like to report a little bit on that. Article came across my desk from a blog that I follow. Elliot Eisenberg, PhD economist. This week, some data was released, and it was entitled Healthy Households. And when the households are healthy in the economy, we see housing be extremely healthy like it has been. Well, U.S. household wealth reached a record $89.1 trillion in quarter two of 16 of this year. So they just got back quarter two numbers. That's the third straight record-setting quarter. So wealth cyclically had peaked in 07 at $67 trillion. Then declined, obviously, through the housing crisis in 09. It bottomed out at $54 trillion. So when you look at that in a relatively, short period of time from 09 to 16, we've gone from $54.4 trillion to $89 trillion in household wealth. So obviously, you know, when people say, what's going on with the U.S. economy? What's driving the housing market? It doesn't help when there's about, 70% increase in household wealth. Beauty of that, too, on the debt side is household debt payments remain at about 10%. And so that's near an all-time low, and that's down dramatically from 13% in 07. So really, household wealth up, household debt down.
It's a beautiful thing.
It really can relate to a solid U.S. housing market. So that's our very, very direct national story kind of relating in there to household wealth. I'm not going to skip the pick three this year. I'm just going to get right to it with some data. I'm not even going to save it for the second segment. We have some new listings. In fact, I hesitate using these as the pick three because this market's been moving so fast. And I know we potentially had some offers coming in on this, but some new properties just hitting the market yesterday. 4824 Robin Court in West Richland. We're looking at a three-bedroom, two-bath Rambler on a West Richland cul-de-sac. 1,600 square feet, new painted exterior and interior, new carpet in the living room and bedrooms, newer laminate wood flooring, great, great layout in the kitchen. Master suite has private walk-in closet and an ensuite bathroom. You're getting this in West Richland at $205,000. So those Ramblers, entry-level West Richland homes, those come up, and it's going to be busy. If you're interested in a property like that, please go to our website, kenmoreteam.com. Shoot us a message. Pick number two, 1204 Sanford Avenue. This is a beautifully updated two-bedroom, one-bath Rambler. It's in Central Richland on Sanford. You've got new carpet. Once again, great job by the owners here. New interior and exterior paint. Big living room open to the kitchen. You've got vinyl windows, heating and cooling. They've put in the ductless heat pump in those older homes to make it have that feel of the central heat and air. You've got a fully fenced backyard, off-street parking. And I tell you what, folks, there's not much available that's decent right now at $125,000.
Wow.
1204 Sanford Avenue. We had two on Sanford this week, both in similar price points, both great, great homes. Once again, kenmoreteam.com if you're interested in taking a look at these. Pick number three, and now we're going to Kennewick for this one, 14 North Palouse. This is a five-bedroom, two-bath Rambler with a basement in central Kennewick. It is almost 2,200 square feet. Original hardwood floors on the main level. You've got spacious kitchen, lots of storage, pass-through window to the dining room. You get two bedrooms and a full bath on the main level. And then in the basement, three more bedrooms and a full bathroom, new laminate flooring in that basement. Great, great property. And that, for to be in central Kennewick there, $195,000. So some opportunities, right? I will tell the buyers out there that a lot of stuff in that price range under $200,000. How hot is the market? Are we still getting multiple offers? Yes, we are. So you have to be very, very prepared in those situations and taking a look at that stuff. However, on the flip side of that, one of the things that we've seen a lot that I wanted to talk about and we were getting a lot of questions about, and that is sellers' requirements to fill out disclosures on the properties they're selling. What are in those documents? What should buyers be paying attention to? And how does that work? So it's interesting. If you're not from Washington or you're new to the state or you've been in other states, what a disclosure statement is it comes in a variety of forms, and that really is the buyer's opportunity to learn as much as they can about a property and the seller's experience with it. Right now, we're looking, that is, in Washington, that seller disclosure statement is called the seller disclosure statement for improved property if there's a residence on it. Even unimproved property if it's vacant land, a different disclosure form. And what that is exactly that. It is 6 pages of questions for the seller that they're legally required to fill out and deliver to the buyer for their review. So those disclosure statements, that is knowledge about structural, knowledge about any potential floods that have been on the property. So there's a lot of questions in there. I wanted to hit some of the big ones today so that people had an idea of what to be looking out for. And this is really their chance to get some information about the property. One of the things we've seen is that buyers have to be aware of is getting a completed disclosure statement. Now, I know that seems easy, right? Sellers are supposed to fill out this disclosure statement. In there, there are directions that they want every answer to have a response. There's 4 responses: yes, no, don't know, or NA for not applicable. What happens a lot of times is, you know, there's a lot of questions. A lot of times sellers feel like they don't even know the answers to some of these questions. So they start to rush through that document. They could inadvertently leave some blanks in there, skip some questions, not fill some things in. As a buyer, though, you've got to wonder, was that question skipped on purpose? Is there something going on here? A lot of times sellers will leave blanks and say, oh, I'm going to ask somebody later. They forget about it. They turn those disclosures in and they don't get clarification on that question. So there's a blank. So you want to make sure if there's some blank spaces on there that you are paying attention to that. The first question that I highlighted that I said can be very important to people is it comes in our first paragraph of the seller disclosure forms, and that is item K. And that says, are there any covenants, conditions, or restrictions recorded against the property? So a lot of times people be like, wow, covenants, conditions, restrictions. In common language, real estate language, people will sometimes hear this referred to as a homeowners association or that has CC&Rs, and that's what stands for covenant, conditions, and restrictions. So what that is those are prompts that forbid or restrict the conveyance, encumbrance, occupancy, or lease of real property to individuals. So you're going to want to look in there. That basically is your rules for your property. And the previous landowner or developer could have imposed those rules on the property. Covers things like what type of fencing you can put up. Can you have boats or RVs parked? If you can, do they have to be behind a fence? What colors, in some cases, can you paint your fence? What colors can you paint your house? Can there be vehicles parked on the curb for a certain length of time? So, and these actually, too, can even restrict, could you rent your property out if you ever decided to? So there, that can even be restricted in the CC&R. So as buyers, if that box is checked as a yes, you're going to want to be aware of what those CC&Rs are. Obtain a copy and read through those so you can see what you're getting into in that situation. Those CC&Rs will also usually control if there is a homeowners association, and then that's a whole nother can of worms of what you want to investigate with the homeowners association and any rules that they might have imposed also. Second question that I highlighted as important to notate and look out for is the source of your irrigation water. Now, there's 2 different questions on there. Number one is, are there any irrigation rights for the property, such as water, right permit, certificate, or claim? What's commonly not known is a lot of times people will be like, oh, yeah, I receive water from KID or I receive water. That doesn't necessarily, though, automatically mean that you have a right or claim to that water. It could be what's known as a service contract to where they will deliver that water. And actually, on our forms, there's another question question number two under irrigation water that addresses that. Does the property receive irrigation water from a ditch company or irrigation district? You're going to want to know because it could affect your bill. It could affect your days that you can water. It is going to affect how your yard is hooked up to that irrigation water, if it truly is irrigation or if it's just city water, in which case you might need what's known as a backflow preventer to help manage what's going on with the health of that water. So those are some of the things, items that you're going to be looking out for as far as general information on the property. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk to Tom about some of the lending issues and then get into some of the structural questions about the property that as a buyer, you're really going to want to pay attention to. And as a seller, you're going to want to make sure you listen in case you make alterations to your home, how you're going to be required to disclose those in the future.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been looking a little bit about disclosures. We get a lot of questions in real estate. What does the seller have to disclose? What's legally required? What should they be disclosing? And then on the buy side of the situation and the transaction, we get a lot of questions from the buyers looking through that. What should I be looking for? What are some of the hot point questions that we should be considering? And our seller disclosure statements are pretty in-depth. I mean, we're talking 6 pages that goes through numerous questions about your ability to sell the property, title to the property. We talked about water situations that serve the property prior to the break. Another thing to point out that is a couple hot button questions, and they've placed these really well into our disclosure statements, is the first 3 questions under structural. A is, has the roof leaked within the last 5 years? Very simple. Just, has there been a roof leak? If there was, what was done to rectify it? Anything that has to do with water intrusion is going to be a big deal. There also potentially could have been an insurance claim on the house. So you're going to want to know how those issues were rectified. Question number two, has the basement flooded or leaked? Once again, that's going to be something that you're gonna wanna know because you had water in the house. Anytime you get water in a property, behind walls, under flooring, you have the potential for mold, which can then be a bigger health issue, and also what was done to rectify the situation. And then here's one that we get into a lot of discussions about with both buyers and sellers, and that is question number C. Have there been any conversions, additions, or remodeling? So what was done to the property during that ownership? And then the big question, the one that a lot of times we get a stutter step on from people, is if yes, were all building permits obtained? And this is a lot of times where people pause and then they look at me and they have that look in their eye. And I'm like, you're about to tell me that your Uncle Joe is an electrician and did all this for pizza and beer on the weekends, aren't you? And usually the answer is like, yes.
Yeah.
And so then we have a problem, right? Because we're trying to sell this house, and especially if maybe electrical was done, electrical changes were done, and then that's covered up with sheetrock, and you missed an L&I inspection because of those electrical changes. Now L&I can't properly inspect because they can't see behind the sheetrock. So guess what's happening in this situation? People are removing sheetrock, and that does not go well.
It's not fun.
It's not fun. It's a difficult situation. You're trying to find a way to rectify this, or you're not getting top dollar for the property because now you have a defect in there that is very, very hard to reconcile. And then the question that follows that up, too, is if you did get the permit, and that question was yes, subsection question number two is if yes, were all final inspections obtained? So not only you got the permit, you had the work done, but then the final inspections were done. This can save you potentially thousands and thousands of dollars when it comes time to resell the property. A lot of times people don't realize that that type of disclosure situation is going to come up. You know, at the time they're doing it, they're just trying to get it done. They want to add a family room. They know somebody that does electrical. They get it done. But then maybe they don't get it inspected or they don't have the proper permit for that. So all of that potential money they saved, now you're tearing some stuff out. You're trying to rectify it after the fact. You're going to give back a big portion of that savings when a simple permit and inspection could have made that situation go a lot different. So those are hot button items to be thinking about and looking at on the seller disclosure statement. I'm going to turn it over to Tom. I know he runs into a lot of these situations because some of this stuff comes up during inspections. They're trying to rectify this on the lending side. So I know Tom has some things to say about what's going on in lending right now. Tom, how's it going at Umpqua? What do you got for us?
You know, it's going good. But with us talking seller disclosures, one thing you should not do is not review the seller disclosures.
Thank you. Exactly. That is like huge, huge
very,
situation.
Very important. So take your time and go through these and really see what the seller has disclosed to you, because there could be some very important things. Now, I also have a long list of stuff you should not do when you're getting a loan. So let's go through that, because all of these things can cause issues that could come up during the processing of the loan that could add stress, maybe prevent you from getting approved, just keep things from going as smooth as they should. First thing I have on my list that you should not do after you're approved for a loan is go out and buy a new car or get a new credit card or charge up existing cards. Yes, we have already pulled your credit when we pre-approved you initially, but at the end of the transaction, we have to refresh your credit report. When we do that, we're going to see if there's any new inquiries on your credit report. If there are, right at the last minute, that's going to trigger us to come and ask, hey, what is this inquiry for Ford from? And they say, oh yeah, I bought a new pickup. They're having a great sale. Maybe your debt to income was close before, and now with this $400 truck payment, you no longer qualify. So make sure that once you get approved, you don't do anything new with your credit. New accounts can also hurt your credit scores. So if you went and opened a new credit card, maybe it doesn't even have a balance, but that is a new account, brand new history, and maybe you're right on the threshold of getting maybe 720 before is what you're at, and then you drop to 705. Maybe you now have a higher interest rate or have higher mortgage insurance. Better to wait until you get into your home before doing anything with your credit. Another thing, and we've seen this, Lance, this sounds crazy, but don't quit your job or change companies without talking to your lender.
Yes, absolutely. No.
I think this transaction was with your team.
We've had it happen a number of times, not just with you, but a number of times. So I'm sure it was.
Similar deal where right at the end, we call the employer and do what's called a verbal verification of employment. And the question that we ask is real simple. Does so-and-so still work there? Yes. If so, when did they start? And we will sometimes make that call. It's happened. And they say, oh, actually, no, Bob left 2 weeks ago. And we're planning on closing tomorrow.
And you're literally like, that's not a good call.
No. Where did Bob go?
Can you check that again, please? This is what I think what our next question is. So then we call the client. They're like, oh, yeah, I moved to a different company. I got a raise. Well, we're now completely backtracking. We have to document, you know, the new hire information. What's the pay going to look like? What's the pay structure going to look like? When did he start? What type of pay structure is it? Going back to underwriting. I mean, so it's going to delay your transaction. Make sure to talk with your lender if you find yourself potentially in that situation. Tying right into this is, let's say you made a salary of $6,000 a month before, and you have another job opportunity where it's now salary plus commission, but that salary is now only $3,000 a month. But with commission, you might get up to $7,000. So you know you're going to be making more. But now we've taken you from a salary position of $6,000 down to $3,000, and we have absolutely no history of commission. We are not going to use that commission to qualify you unless you have a 2-year history of it. That could be a big drop in income, which would be a big jump in debt to income, which means you may not qualify for your loan. So again, that's one of those things where if you find yourself in a situation of making those transfers, talk to your lender first. Another thing that I think people get frustrated about, and I get frustrated about, is bank accounts. Anything that you do on your bank accounts, besides what you're spending money on, we don't care about that. It's the money that's coming in. If you're transferring money from one account to another, and then you maybe take some money from there and then to another account, and you're just moving money all around in the months leading up to buying a house, be prepared to fully paper trail those transfers. Any out of the ordinary deposits, we have to source where they come from. And then we get that bank statement where the money came from, and now we see a different deposit. Okay, well, now we have to ask for that. And so each of these can snowball into additional conditions that feels like it's never ending. Where if you get your money all into the accounts you want them in well in advance, so that when we get our 2 months bank statements, there's not a bunch of money jumping around, it's going to be a lot easier on you because you're not going to have to paper trail all those transfers. This sounds like common sense, but don't forget to pay your bills.
I love that one.
Again,
don't forget to pay your bills.
We refresh your credit report right at the end. Some people, you know, they're saving up money and they say, okay, I'm just going to not make this payment this month because I need this a little bit extra money for the down payment. We're going to see that you didn't make that payment and it's going to drop your score. You have no idea what that'll do to your credit score, but it won't be good for your loan approval. So don't do that. And then don't put accounts in dispute. Maybe you came in and applied and there's a mistake on your credit report you didn't know about. And you say, okay, I got to go to dispute that. Don't dispute it until you're done. And the reason is any disputed account has to either be resolved and or at a zero balance. So you might just prevent yourself from being able to close if you put that thing in a dispute. So see if there's a different way to address it to just get your loan closed and try to handle that after closing. We talked about this. No new credit cards. Even if you're getting 20% off at the store, just wait because new accounts could hurt your score. We see this also a lot. I ask people, oh, you got enough for your down payment saved up? Yeah, we sure do. But then we get a bank statement. It comes in. Turns out they didn't have their money saved up. It was actually a cash gift from grandma. And now we have to document this as a gift. Don't accept cash in the form of a gift because there's no way for the bank to really prove where that money came from. So make sure that if you're getting a gift, in advance, talk with your lender. Find out what's the best way to handle this because there's going to be a process that you have to follow. Basically, your lender is your best friend while you're getting that mortgage. And lenders have to document much more than we ever have. But it's a good thing, Lance, I think, because we don't want to get ourselves back in a situation where we're in 07 and 08. So we're going above and beyond on everything. If there's even one little thing that you think about doing that you say, maybe this could affect my loan, ask the question before you do it.
Tom, that's good information. We've been in those situations before. Everyone on that list over the last, 17 years, everyone on that list has happened at some point in a transaction. And so I 100% agree with what's been gone over there. And so it's a great list. It's important to, especially the car thing that you always talk about. I always tell people, let's get you the garage first to put the car in.
That's great.
And then the car.
I like that.
And that way it just, because it's much more difficult in those situations to handle that and can really throw, like you said, those ratios off. We've had it kill deals before. So, I mean, we've been able to work around it before, but we've also had it kill deals. So that simple call to your lender to say, hey, there's this great special going on. I've got, I was going to buy all my appliances and open this credit card and get, 50% off. And it's a one-time deal. Call your lender. Know what your credit score is. Know what that might affect. And just make sure it's an okay situation before you go.
Absolutely.
Because if not, you might not have a house to put all those appliances in that you're buying. Mm-hmm. So that can make a big, big difference. As we wrap up here, just a couple more situations on the disclosure form that I wanted to go over. Kind of some of those hot button questions that you want to check out and make sure that you're clear about. Section number 8 on our Washington State disclosures, homeowners association and common interest. There is a disclosure on there. Is there a homeowners association? The question right after that follows up. Are there regular periodic assessments? So these are your annual, some are quarterly, some associations have monthly. What type of payments are you going to have to be making to the homeowners association? In general, you're going to want to know that. That is not a negotiable item in general because they have the ability to lien your property. So you want to make sure you know what's going on there. and what those payments are. The question that gets the biggest laugh and seems the most ridiculous from sellers that fill out the forms is question number J under the environmental section, and that is, has the property been used as an illegal drug manufacturing site? The sellers will always look at me and they're like, Lance, seriously, is this a question? And I'm like, yeah, it's absolutely a question. And they're like, who's going to incriminate themselves and put yes on there? And I always laugh and I say, okay, that's not the intent. I see how you read the question, but I said, occasionally somebody has to put yes there because maybe in a foreclosure or something, they bought a house that was documented that was used as a meth house to manufacture meth. And so in that situation, maybe someone bought a house that had been condemned, then they went through the process to rehabilitate it, go through all the environmental process and bring it back to where it was habitable. If somebody had done that, they would still have to disclose that. So I said, it's not so much somebody admitting that, oh, yeah, we've been manufacturing things back here and just forgot to tell anybody, tell the disclosures. That's not generally what's happening, although if that is, yeah, I guess you better answer correctly.
Well, it does, because years ago, before we bought the house we're in now, when we lived in a trailer in a park here in Kennewick, one of the houses on the other side, the people got evicted because they were making drugs.
Oh, yeah.
They got booted and the house went into foreclosure. It was a trailer house, but somebody was going to buy it.
Yep. And absolutely. And there can be a lot of bad stuff associated with that. So McKay, personal example, absolutely perfect. You're going to want to look at that question. And boy, we're going to have a huge discussion if we see yes on that. So I mainly just mentioned that because that's the one where the sellers always get, get a kick out of it. That is interesting. So important to note. And then the very next to last section that we always have people really check out is lead-based paint. If a house was built before 1978, sometimes people will know for sure if there is lead-based paint in there or not. They might have had the house tested. If it was ever tested and you know about the presence of lead-based paint, you have to make a disclosure about those tests and those reports. Usually not a huge deal as long as people know what they're dealing with, know that it was taken care of properly, and that just knowing about what's there and what you should and shouldn't do can make a big, big difference. So those are kind of some of the hot button questions that we're looking at that has to do with seller disclosures. We are paying attention to those. We want our buyers to pay attention to those, and we want to make sure our sellers are making the proper disclosures so they're protected. Appreciate the information from Tom on the lending side. Tom, if people need to get pre-approved, where should they go?
Go to my website, tomcoinhomeloans.com, and it also has my phone number on there as well.
Great. If you have any questions about any of the houses you see this weekend, go to kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a quick message. We'd be glad to help get you into those. And we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.